This you Thursday Night Talk is coming right up. This week, Eric Kirk is our host, and it's open mic night. Open mic night. He wants to know what's on your mind. Tune in and call in at 826-4805, or if you're out of the area, at 1-800-640-5911, and to our text line, 492-KHSU. Now over to Eric.
Yes, thank you, Michael. This is Eric Kirk. This is Thursday Night Talk. Tonight, I'm standing in for somebody else who could not make it, the regular host for this Thursday. Brenda was not able to make it. She is feeling ill tonight, but she will be back next month, and I'm sure with a very interesting show. Tonight, I'm going to throw out a number of topics for discussion. I'm expecting a few phone calls, actually, for people to come in, call in for their topics of choice. There's a lot of news that we're going to discuss, both local and national. Locally, I would like to discuss probably in the second half, because it looks like we've got the first half kind of filled up. But in the second half of the show, I'd like to discuss the pending statement or resolution that is going to be passed, hopefully, by the Board of Supervisors pertaining to civil rights and diversity, whether or not it's going to look something like a sanctuary proposal, who knows, but we do know that with what's happening in the community and nationally, particularly with ICE activity and a large portion of our community, I believe we're pretty close to 15% Latino. I don't know what percentage of the population is undocumented, but my last show I dedicated to Centro de Pueblo, who are working with other groups to try to get legislation passed both at the state and local levels to limit the cooperation of enforcement and local agencies to the minimum required, at least that's one of the goals, so to the minimum required by federal and state law. And we will probably discuss that more in the second half. But basically, it came up this last Tuesday for a discussion, but they decided to bounce it back to the Human Rights Commission, who will propose some wording over the next few weeks, and it's going to be back before the Board of Supervisors on April 11th, always on a Tuesday. And I'd like to talk about what you would like to see in that statement and what you would like to see in terms of local policy. And I've got a few ideas to pass around, and we may have a caller, somebody calling in on that point as well. We also have national news that we're going to discuss. The much trumpeted Obamacare repeal was supposed to come up for a vote today, but it didn't quite have the votes. They've delayed the vote. They're going to fast track it so that once the vote happens, there isn't a whole lot of discussion of it, so the CBO can't evaluate it, and so that it just gets passed. But that's if they come up with the votes. The problem is every time they try to move it a little bit to the right and away from public health care, they lose moderates. Every time they move it to try to catch the moderates in the party, what's left of them, there aren't very many left in the Republican Party, but there are a few in the House, but then they tend to lose the Freedom group that has pretty much run Congress for the past 6 years. So we in the meantime, it looks like the vote has been delayed until tomorrow, until they can scramble for votes, and then they've got to try to get something out of the Senate that would match this bill and not move it one way or the other. Senate tends to be more moderate, so they've got to. So I wouldn't be surprised if they actually try to make the House proposal more moderate. In the old days, they would have started talking to conservative Democrats, but the Republicans for the past 6 years, actually maybe even longer, have been governed by what they call the Hastert rule since they've held the majority. And basically the Hastert rule is that they will not coalition with Democrats if there aren't enough Republicans to win the majority of vote. They are not going to try to have a bill that passes with the help of Democrats when the majority, when you don't have more than half being represented by Republicans. It's actually a very destructive rule that the Republicans have imposed on themselves, and it's got them into a lot of trouble right now. Otherwise, they would probably be able to pry off a few people who are worried about re-election, maybe even be real creative and talk to the left wing of the Democratic Party and throw in a public option, get rid of the individual mandate, get rid of some of the regulations that they don't like on the insurance companies, and then let them compete with a public option. I'd like to see that, but they wouldn't dare let that happen. There are people that just would not dare let that happen. It was originally supposed to be in this program, but Lieberman and others, Senator Lieberman and others, made very sure that it was not in the bill. And we got to remember, when the original Obamacare was passed, Republicans were actually allowed to write the thing. Chuck Grassley, senator from Iowa, wrote huge portions of it, and then at the last minute said, and by the way, I can't vote for it. Pressure's too hard, told Max Baucus, who had pretty much been over backwards for him. So there isn't even a pretense of bipartisanship this time around, not even as they're possibly going down in flames tomorrow. So we can talk a little bit about that, what you'd like to see, a little bit of discussion in California about whether or not to start our own single-payer system, which is at least currently allowed for. And we can talk a little bit about that. Governor Brown throwing a little bit of cold water on it, but other people have some proposals that we'll see if they go forward. In the meantime, we'll be hearing from a former Humboldt County resident, now living in Florida, professor of philosophy and religion, Bart Grzalski. He's going to explain why, though he has been active with a number of progressive people in the past, he has supported Donald Trump for this last election. He'll get to explain that. I've agreed to give him about 10 minutes to explain it. Maybe we'll take some time after that for phone calls if anybody wants to join in that conversation, but he wants to make the pitch to you. He thinks he can sell Donald Trump to progressives, so we'll see. There's so much else in the news. I don't know that we'll get to it all, but I'd like to discuss those topics. And if there's a particular issue that you would like to discuss, The phone number where if you want to take part in the discussion at any time is 826-4805, or if you're out of the area, 1-800-640-5911. That's 826-4805 or 1-800-640-5911. We also have a text option now. It's TNT at 492-KHSU. That's TNT at 492-KHSU. And if you didn't have the chance to write down these numbers, they are, of course, available on our website, which is khsu.org. My name is Eric Kirk. You're listening to Thursday Night Talk. It is a bit of a mix of topics tonight. And I think at this time we can go. I believe we have Bart on the line.
Yes, we do, Eric. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. So if you want to tell us a little bit about yourself.
Oh, I do. So I got about 10 minutes. I'm going to spend a lot of that talking about myself because that explains why I wound up being a Trumpian. But first off, I want to say two things, Eric. First off, I want to thank you for having me on your show. I really appreciate it. I know a lot of people in SoHum are very anti-Trump. I hope to say a few things that will cause them at least to rethink their position. But I want to say that, like you, I'm for the public option. And I believe that if Trump were left to his own devices, he too would come out for the public option. But as you pointed out very clearly, he's locked into the Senate and the House, and these folks are all over the map. I don't think they're going to pass anything, frankly, about health care in the next week. So I think this is a dead issue, and he'll move on to other issues. So I've invited several SoHum friends to listen in, and I want to thank you if you are listening in. John Boyd, David and Annie Katz, Stephanie Luzik, Holly Sweet, Sally Venn, Gil Grigori, Roby Tenario, and our adopted grandson, their son, Tamil. Now, I've got a PhD in philosophy and religion. Philosophy. I'm a professor emeritus, which means I taught and was well thought of. I've got 6 books out there, about 50 academic articles, poems, over 100 talks that I've given, many at Humboldt State University, and most of them have been on how nonviolence defeats terrorism. I spent about a month interviewing the environmental activists who saved the Sellybell Grove, and then that's what got the Sinkione off the ground. And I fell in love with all of them. And I don't mean as a sexual love. I mean great admiration. And I still have great admiration for them. And I'm still working on the book. If they're listening, I am working on the book actively now. I may have to come back to Humboldt, Soham, to look at some of my old files. That'll be a problem, but I'm writing the book actively now. Thank you. I just want you to know that. After those interviews, I came back with my wife, and eventually I quit being a professor at Northeastern University, and we both moved to Soham. I was a forest activist. I joined Earth First. I think Daryl Chaney is a great songster and a very good forest protector. I knew and met Judy Berry back in Maryland during the riots against the Vietnamese War. I was living on Elk Ridge when near my best friend on Mother Earth, who is John Boyd, and he's listening, I hope. He helped me, and eventually he helped me to learn how to grow medical marijuana, which I did, and I taught him how to grow peas, and which he did. We left for Ireland in 2008, where my wife Marion and I ran a Buddhist retreat center for 3 years. And I taught mindfulness meditation, as did she. We then moved from the retreat center into Limerick, which is a city in sort of south central Ireland on the Shannon River. And I became a well-known poet in that city. And I sang in pubs, and I taught the mindfulness-based stress reduction course with Marion. Then with Marion, we went to Thailand for 4 months, I think in 2013, and then we came back and I became suicidally depressed. And I mean seriously suicidally depressed. I had the means ready to go, the pills, the whole thing. And I wrote a poem about why I didn't do it, but that's not for this show. We moved then out of Ireland because of my depression, to a gated community called The Villages, and that's in Florida. And we did that on August 8th, 2013. I remember the date because that was the only date I had, I could use my miles for a ticket because we live in Social Security. And Marion's brother lives here, so that's really what got us to come here. And we could afford living here, it turns out. We could never have gone back to Soham. Soham was way over our head price-wise. So I became a manic bipolar person after we got back to Florida, and I borrowed tens of thousands of dollars from friends. Many of you might be listening onto the show right now. And I did that to buy a small house on a lake where I fish 100 yards from my house. This morning I caught an 8-pound largemouth bass, which I, of course, threw back. Okay, then 2016 rolled around, and the Democrats were running Bernie Sanders, and we were great Bernie Sanders supporters. I mean, we both voted for Bernie in the primaries. And Hillary Clinton was opposed to him, and she was, we have nothing but negative thoughts about Hillary Clinton. She's a notorious liar. And that we all know that. Remember, she lied about landing in where was it, Bosnia? That was one of the most, that was a lie that kicked her out of the that got Obama to beat her actually in the previous round. She's a warmonger. She's the one that got Libya to be destroyed and laughed about killing Gaddafi. She said, yeah, we came, we saw, we conquered. All right, we came, we saw, he died, ha, ha, ha. And we were concerned that if Hillary actually became president, we'd probably go to war with Russia. So we weren't going to vote for Hillary. So the question is, who the heck do you vote for? Because she knocked Bernie out, which really annoyed us. So do we vote for Donald Duck? And I was actually plotting voting for, I mean, I wasn't going to vote for Jill Stein because I'd worked with her campaign the previous round, and it was hopeless. I just felt there was serious problems anyway. So I couldn't vote for any of the crazy Republicans, and we were stuck about what to do. But then I read an article by the Republican guy Buchanan, and it was about the topic America First.
You're talking about Pat Buchanan?
Oh, yeah. That right winger.
Yes.
Okay, I'm sorry. Maybe I'm not speaking very clearly. I'll try to speak more.
Yeah, Pat Buchanan is very well known as a very, very right wing figure. Ran for president at one point.
He did.
Yes.
He did. Yeah, he did. And I used to always find him kind of obnoxious. But I read this article he wrote on America First. And he basically said about time. And what he said was America First was that all the policies of the United States, all the military policies, all the financial policies would all be decided on what was best for Americans. And that's what America First means. So I was kind of, intrigued by that because I'm a philosophy guy and we like to do deductions and figure out public policy and all that shit. So,
got to be careful with the FCC, Bart.
Oh, I'm sorry. All that. Yeah, I apologize. That's a Latin word, by the way. You know, that word actually is from Latin.
I think it's Anglo-Saxon.
It means he knows, she knows. Actually, it means he or she or it knows.
Anyways, so why do you support Donald Trump?
Yeah, well, I'm going to do it. So I wrote a book. So here's my first book. Starts out, I should not have had to write this book. In any way, halfway honest election, the platform and positions of both candidates would be readily available. My first sentence. Later on in the introduction to my first book, I quote from Kimberly A. Streisel, who writes, the press buries Hillary Clinton's sins. As reporters focus on Trump, they miss new details on Hillary's rotten record. This is by the editor of the Wall Street Journal, who wrote an article. Another quote from that same thing, if the average voters turn on TV for 5 minutes this week, chances are they know that Donald Trump made lewd remarks a decade ago and now stands accused of groping women. But if the average voters had the TV on 24/7, they still probably haven't heard the news about Hillary Clinton, that the nation now has proof of pretty much everything she has been accused of. So my first book was basically to work out what Trump was really up to, and I found it quite interesting. I was surprised. Second book, in the back of the second book, it says the following paragraph on the back cover. Christians and those who want world peace are greatly disappointed in the foreign policies of the United States. Currently at war with Afghanistan for 15 years now, Iraq, Yemen, and Syria. With Clinton urging Obama on, the U.S. destroyed Libya for no apparent reason. Clinton also urged Obama to send 51,000, I'm reading from a computer, so 51,000 American military to the Valley of Death of Afghanistan. Nothing in any of these actions reflects Christian values or is conducive to world peace.
Okay, so we've got why you didn't vote for Clinton. Why are you supporting Donald Trump?
Hold on, you're jumping to the next.
We're getting over the 10 minutes here, so I want to get to the.
Oh, okay. In this short book, I explain why Christians and peace advocates voted for candidate Trump. I present an annotated version of his speech for 2016. He is a candidate of peace. I also include the powerful anti-war poem by Mark Twain. And basically, so we voted for my wife and I both voted for Trump because he was the candidate of peace.
Candidate of peace. All right. He's going to up the military budget by $54 billion, biggest military buildup since Reagan, and he's the candidate for peace.
Okay. One finish on my third book back coverage. The deep state is attacking President Donald Trump with the aim of having him impeached or assassinated. It does not care which.
All right.
And I explain why that's happening, why they're against him, and they weren't, say, against Obama, who supposedly was a peace candidate. They're against him because he's the candidate of peace.
Okay. And, all right. Well, that Eric, is definitely perspective that he's the candidate for peace. Has he shown any evidence of it in office so far?
Well, he showed evidence of it in his April speech of 2016. And, and no one ever heard that speech because of the Clinton propaganda machine, which rubbed everything out, which made you think he was just a tweeter.
But I'm talking about since he was president. What has he done towards peace?
He is. He's doing that.
He's bombed a school, a hospital in Syria. He's killed an American citizen, seven or eight children, and got an American soldier killed. What is he doing towards peace?
He is fighting ISIS.
Okay.
And that's, and in Gandhian terms, and I've got a book out there on Gandhi, in Gandhian terms, that is a part of nonviolence because you cannot persuade ISIS to stop killing us by walking in front of them and exposing ourselves. They would just kill us.
Okay, so he's the peace candidate because he's declared he's going to make war against ISIS.
And otherwise, he's going to bring all the troops home from all the bases around the world. He's going to shut down all these little wars. He's not going to have any more of these tiny wars. Why there's so much money into the army is so he can have a bristling army stationed here in the States that nobody would dare attack unless they were crazy.
Nobody's going to attack us unless they're crazy anyway.
Well, I don't know. I mean, how about the Twin Towers?
The Twin Towers, armies aren't going to deter terror attacks, but they will deter a nation state from attacking us.
I think. Look what happened in Westminster yesterday, an attack on the Parliament building in the heart of London.
Yeah, by a guy with a car and a knife. You know why there only four people were killed?
No, but there's more dying.
He couldn't buy a gun.
There's more dying. There's 20 people catastrophically injured, and several of them are going to die.
But he could not buy a gun there.
That's right. Yeah, and that's because it's England. Yeah. Now, if he was in the States, he would have had an AK-47 or three of them and shot everybody to death.
Right.
So that's why it's more dangerous here in the States. And that's why Trump insists on vetting people from the Middle East who are coming to the States. He wants to make sure they aren't going to become terrorists.
There's no way you can make sure of that. People who are born here become terrorists. But
I'm not denying that. This guy in England was born in England. But people become terrorists because why? This is what I used to lecture on all the time. Because we're over there killing their people. That's why. Why did Bin Laden get pissed? Why did Bin Laden get pressured against us? Because we had troops in Saudi Arabia. We had black troops in Saudi Arabia. And that was a huge violation of Muslim culture over there.
Also because we bombed schools, because we bombed hospitals,
because we killed children. It was the Israelis that were doing that, and we were supporting them 100%. That's why Bin Laden, that's one place where I have an issue with Trump, and I do have issues with Trump. That's one place. We should not be supporting Israel 100%, whatever they do, and we should not be giving Israel $3 billion every January. We should use that money here in the States for jobs.
All right, let me invite callers here. If anybody would like to respond to Professor Bart Grzelczyk as to why, as to whether or not Donald Trump is the candidate for peace, the phone number is 826-4805 or 800-640-5911. That's 826-4805, 800-640-5911, and it does look like a call's coming in. So before we do that, I'm just going to ask again, is there any indication, not a speech he made in February that the media, because it was pro-Clinton, hit buried, since he's taken office, has he made any movements towards peace?
He's been in office for 9 weeks.
Yeah.
Everything he's doing is consistent with his plan to pull people back from other places, and except for the Israeli question, which I have troubles with, and to take out ISIS, and he wants to do that with the help of the Russians.
Apparently.
And as for world peace, yeah, he wants to have peace with Russia. That would help world peace a whole lot.
We haven't been at war with Russia, but not in years. But that's, in either case, it looks like we do have our first caller. Diane, you're on the air. Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
Hi. Sorry, I just had to turn the radio down. You know, this business about Trump being a man for peace, during the campaign, he proudly stated that Americans love him so much that he could shoot someone. He could kill someone on Fifth Avenue in broad daylight, and no one would care. What does your guest have to say about that? That Trump, you know, to say he could kill someone.
Can you hear the question, Bert?
Yeah, I did. And thank you very much, Diane. That's a good question. No, I think that he was just telling the truth. I mean,
oops, sorry about that. Go ahead.
Someone outside the guise of getting rid of ISIS, outside of that whole concept, that would still be peaceful. The concept of
shooting someone in this country.
In broad daylight.
Wait a second. He said he could do that. He never would do that.
Well, but then why even say it? Then why even say it? Who is he trying to attract by that kind of comment?
He was playing to everybody. He said, look, I can pretty much do what I want, but I won't. I'm dedicated.
He can do whatever he wants without considering consequences?
No, I didn't say that. I don't put words in my mouth. You're putting words in my mouth, Diane.
All right, Bart, why don't you go ahead and finish what you're saying?
Yeah, okay. What I'm saying is, yeah, he said he could do that, but he wouldn't.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Because of consequences.
All right.
Because it'd be immoral and violent.
All right. It looks like we may have another call. A candidate for peace. I'm waiting to see it. He's been, I think 9 weeks is a long time. The 100 days, first 100 days is supposed to be the defining point of your presidency. It shows what you're going to do. And so far, the only legislation, actually, he hasn't even introduced legislation. This thing was written in a hurry by Paul Ryan and others in secret, and nobody has even gotten to see it yet, and they'll have a few hours. But all he's really done is written executive orders, half of which are incoherent, another one which has been declared unconstitutional now by 7 judges at least, a couple of them who are Bush appointed. What's he doing?
Are you talking to me?
Yes.
He's only been in office for less than 9 weeks, which is 63 days. 63 days. He has not had any grace period at all. Once he actually beat Hillary, which surprised both him and very much surprised Hillary and the deep state. The deep state are the neocons, the intelligence agencies, and so on. They went after him with a vengeance before he even did anything.
So it's somebody else's fault that he's not getting anything done.
No,
all right.
No.
We'll take...
Oh, no. I didn't say that, Eric.
All right. Well, the deep state's fault. All right, David and Bayside, we're going to make this the last call in this discussion.
Well, that's fine, Eric. Hey, by the way, Eric, thank you very much.
Well, we're not there, Bart. We got one more call. David and Bayside. Hello?
Hello. How are you there tonight?
Yes.
Okay, so I was very interested in this this whole peace concept where they're saying our president is a peace candidate. I was reading the New York Times this morning, and they're talking about spending an incredible amount of money rebuilding our nuclear arsenal. So what does Bart feel about this? Thank you.
Could you hear that, Bart?
Well, I did. And I look, the New York Times is a known mouthpiece for the deep state. That's what I think about that.
All right.
So I
could swear the New York Times are the ones who published the Pentagon Papers, but...
they did, but in those days they weren't. They've been bought out.
They've been bought out. Okay, all right.
And they're losing money like mad. So is the Washington Post. They're all going down the tubes. People are going to rely on things like your show and other places. Anyway, thank you very much.
Thank you, Bart. Thank you for calling in, and we'll talk to you soon. And you have a book. Is there any way people can reach you?
I got three books. Yeah. Just look up my name on Amazon.
Okay.
G-R-U-Z-A-L-S-K-I. 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 Or look up the Deep State versus President Donald Trump, and that'll get you to my name, and then you can see all three books. One of them is less than $5, just so you know. It's less than a Starbucks cup of coffee.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much, Bart. All right, we're going to move on from there. We may have a caller in line. If you want to address that and whether or not, you know, this obviously, you know, a lot of people feel the way he does. There were a lot of people who voted for Bernie Sanders who did not vote for Hillary Clinton. That's something we'll be discussing for years. Anyway, that, you know, is another perspective out there. He's somebody who feels very strongly about that. And granted, now Donald Trump did not take the majority of votes, but he did get a lot of votes. A lot, millions and millions of people did vote for him, and that's something the left does have to address. Is that, you know, we can write them all off as deplorables and you know, maybe eccentric and in some ways, and maybe some of them are. But this is a, we have seemed to have lost the message on the left and lost focus, although it seemed like we were maybe gaining it during the primaries. I think the Democrats have to take real stock. How did they lose to this guy? How did they lose to Donald Trump? And something we're going to be discussing into eternity. I want to turn the discussion more local, because I am, again, very concerned about this. And if anybody wants to call in and has any more to say on whether or not Donald Trump is the president for peace, it keeps referring to him as the candidate for peace, as if he's not in office, okay, he's been in office for 63 days. And we still really haven't seen much. Only 63 days, you know, again, the first 100 days is the defining point of a presidency. You're supposed to have your stuff out there by then, not necessarily accomplishing it, but at least have your agenda out there and clear. And if anybody even understands what the agenda is, maybe you can call in and explain it to me, 826-4805 or 800-640-5911, because it really seems unfocused at this point. It does look like the Obamacare repeal is going down in flames. It seemed like they were like within 10 votes, but it seems like they can't close the deal. They're going to do some arm twisting tonight hope that they can have something that they can fast track tomorrow. There is no filibuster in the House. There's nothing the Democrats can do about this whole thing except sit back and watch and talk to the press. They are completely on the outside of this. There's to my knowledge, there's been no approaches whatsoever even to get this passed, even to conservative Democrats. Very fascinating time we live in, where everything is completely not partisan in that level. And I'm not even saying I want to see that happen. I'm afraid that they would go to Democrats, and Democrats would basically they'd be able to pry off enough Democrats to basically sink the whole concept of national health care. You know, I was thinking maybe it was better if they would just repeal it, and then we can come back with something closer to single payer. But the impact on a lot of people, I think, is what, you know, the moderates who are left in the Republican Party are facing. The impact is huge, and apparently, according to the polls, Obamacare is now more popular than ever on the eve of the potential for it to be shut down. Are they really going to put an end to it, Obamacare, or are they really just kind of tweaking it? Are they repealing it and basically replacing it with something that's just pretty much the same thing, only a little bit less socialistic, I guess, because they're going to change Medicaid? really important topic. Again, not a whole lot anybody can do except put pressure on you know, your people. But I think the I think all of the local people are pretty much just sitting and watching because they aren't really part of the discussion. When it gets to the Senate, we'll be hearing about filibusters if it gets to the Senate. I haven't seen anything happening. It's amazing, too, that the Republicans have opposed this for 8 years now, and they still don't have something in writing. They didn't have anything then. They don't have anything to replace it with. And now they have the power to replace it. They can pass one of the 50 bills that they've passed, and it doesn't look like they are going to be able to pass that same repeal bill because they are worried about the impact. Would like to talk a little bit about the Board of Supervisors. Board of Supervisors have basically lateraled to the Human Rights Commission to propose some wording. And the question is, what's in there? Everybody's kind of afraid to use the term sanctuary because President Trump has already talked about denying funding to sanctuary cities and sanctuary states so that people feel like if they can avoid that word. But the question is what practical impact can it have? Is it just going to be a philosophical statement, or is it going to actually have local policy impact? And we know that Sheriff Downey has already pledged to only cooperate on the level that he's required to, according to federal law, that he's not going to go out of his way. And I guess the real important thing is that we want everybody to feel safe calling the police. So if the community itself is not as safe, if people are afraid that if they call the police, they're going to be reported to immigration and possibly be deported. So there is an overall, there's a humanitarian basis, and then there's a very practical basis. So how do you accomplish this? And what kind of wording is put into such a statement? You know, other issues are, what do local agencies do with deportations? There is a serious danger out there of that parents are being deported, but kids left behind. Sometimes kids are even citizens. And when they are American citizens, over the years when there's been an attempt to reunify them with their parents in their countries of origin, where the parents have already been deported, there have been people in these agencies who say, hey, these kids are American citizens. We're responsible for them. It's more important that they stay in this country than be reunified with their parents. You know, and some would feel that that's very draconian. And so maybe something in the statement that addresses and says, you know, that if parents are actually deported, that the policy of any local agencies is reunification. Now, I don't know if there are state or federal guidelines that affect this, but it seems to be different in different local areas. So a statement, again, that would say, obviously, we will comply as a county with state and federal law. Obviously they can't pass one that states anything other than that. But what should go into this statement? Phone number 826-4805 or 1-800-640-5911. That's 826-4805 or 800-640-5911. And then the other topic I wanted to bring up was the possibility of single payer in California. Is that something we can do? Governor Brown is kind of discouraging the concept, saying, you know, but he is actually a fiscal conservative. He's always been a fiscal conservative, even in the 1970s. He's known as being, you know, for being Governor Moonbeam, for having proposed, among other things, satellite communications, which eventually came true, but while he was a visionary, he always believed in balancing the budget. So he is maybe even kind of obsessed with that, at least for a Democrat. But the point is California, if it stood by itself, would be, I believe, the sixth largest economy in the world. There are lots of economies that are smaller than ours that manage to put together single payer or even more overtly socialized medicine programs. And the question is, how do we go about doing that? I guess it, you know, would mean we definitely would have to redirect a number of our financial resources. But is that really a possibility? Can California engage it? I know that a couple of other states have looked into it. Vermont went on a path for towards single payer, but they're finding it's very difficult. You got to be able to pay for it. You got to come up with a way to finance it, help it be self-financing, maybe not be so dependent on federal programs. But again, the structure of California, it's a state, it's not a nation, can't raise its own money the same way that other countries do, or not without generating an additional burden to the federal tax. I mean, that is something we'd have to really look at, but is that a possibility? So we've got those topics out there. If you want to call in, 826-4805, 800-640-5911. And of course, we have the suggestion from Bart Grzelski that he voted for Donald Trump because he's the candidate for peace, because he's going to defeat ISIS and unify with Russia. And after that, we will, we'll be in a much better place. He quoted Gandhi as the justification for defeating ISIS through military plans. So anyways, please call in, 826-4805. I think we've got somebody on the phone. I'm not quite sure what's happening in the other room there. So as soon as we have that, I'll be happy to put you on the air. Okay, Mark, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. My name is Mark Wilson. I'm a biology professor at Humboldt State, and I think extremely highly of our religious studies department. We have some excellent scholars in that department, and I was kind of surprised to hear your earlier speaker, because I had never heard his name before, listed as an emeritus professor of that department. And I went and looked, and I couldn't find any evidence that he had ever been on the faculty there. He may have been a guest lecturer.
No, he wasn't at HSU. He lived in Humboldt County, but he was never a professor at HSU. So I don't know where he was a professor. I don't know if he mentioned where. I don't know those
details. I thought you had said he was an emeritus professor at HSU.
No, and definitely not at HSU.
I looked up his credentials, and they're unbelievable. For example, he claims to have a PhD in philosophy and religious studies, public policy, conceptual analysis, analytic philosophy, Buddhism, and then later he claims to have a PhD in philosophy, English and Latin, mathics and philosophy.
Well,
and
he's
it just
been busy,
seems like
I don't know anything about that, and you know, it's he puts it out there, and I suppose you can go to his website.
Okay, I just want to clarify that he is not an emeritus professor of Humboldt State.
Yeah, definitely. At least that's not what he told me. But he did not say where. So, take that where you will.
Okay.
All right?
Thank you.
Yep.
Sure.
Okay, so we have George. You're on the air.
How you guys doing?
Doing good.
Yeah, we were talking about financing things, and I thought, maybe 15 years ago, if we didn't jump into wars for oil, maybe we'd have $3 trillion to spend on health care.
Well, that's a good point, because I think, you know, when you look at some of these other countries, Sweden, even Mexico, Brazil, that have more extensive public medicine than we do, most of Asia now, it's usually the countries with the lower military budgets that can manage to afford it. Now, the way some people would frame it, including Donald Trump and a number of his supporters, are, well, that's because, you know, nobody else wants to take responsibility, and we're footing the bill for NATO, and we're keeping everybody safe, so we can't afford the same things. We're sacrificing for the rest of the world, for the free world. That's what they would say.
Then you look at $21 billion for the wall in Mexico. I mean, come on.
Yeah, $21 billion is one estimate. Some other estimates are higher. And maintenance, who knows? You know, but... Yeah, I it,
yeah.
And for for a program that even if we were to agree that keeping people out of here was is of paramount, you know, importance, which I don't. I actually believe that anybody on the planet should be able to go wherever they want, but that's just me. But even if I believe that, the fact of the matter is the vast majority of people who come into the country and are here undocumented actually come in on tourist visas, which means usually they fly in, which means they'll be looking down at that wall as they fly over.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and ironically, of course, this was Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, people are returning to what was Mexico.
Did it make it this far up? I thought we were actually in Russian hunting territory here. Did Mexico make it up this far?
That's true. It's more Southern California.
Yeah, I think it's more Southern. Yeah. But
you got the point.
Yeah.
Okay,
I got it.
Well, thanks for the show. I was going to call in earlier, but I had some trouble. And I was going to mention that I used to live in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And I found out Florida was going to go underwater because of global warming.
Okay, I don't know if all Florida will, but there are concerns.
Florida's about 12 feet above sea level, right. I think, at its highest point now.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I mean, hopefully we won't see. But all right. Well, thank you for your call. And our next caller is Peter in Fortuna. You're on the air.
Hello. Thanks for the show. I always enjoy it. But my question is regarding universal single-payer health care.
Mm-hmm.
And I've asked this question when Joe Biden had a call-in about the policy when they proposed it, but I never got an answer. Now, my question is, I pay workers' comp to my employees,
yes,
which only covers them basically 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. Now, if we have universal health care that is 24/7 coverage, there's an overlap. Why can't we tap into and reform the workers' comp law with single-payer health care? If, you know, I'd be glad to pay the deductible as an employer and not pay comp. Why do we need both? And
well,
there's so much money in the comp system. I think that would help cover a single-payer.
Workers' comp, of course, only covers work-related injury. It doesn't cover other sickness that you might take
but
on.
It's still an overlap.
And it also covers you for loss of income during
well,
the
that
time that you're
on part of the disability portion of comp. But there's an enormous waste in overlap, and the comp system is just overburdened.
Well, I think the comp system would be redundant if we ever had universal health care.
That's my point. And
yeah,
the amount of money that's being spent on comp, if it was put towards single payer, mm-hmm. and I tried to figure out, but I can't even find out the budget for the comp system and how much money actually goes into that system. But, I mean, it would be hard to decipher how much goes towards.
I don't know. It's an insurance system.
Rehabilitation.
It's an insurance system, and so it's a pooling concept, and I don't know that much about the financial structure of it, but it would probably be moot, other than perhaps the coverage for loss of income. If we had a universal health care system,
in
the form of single payer, which, by the way, to me, single payer is actually kind of conservative. I'm actually for a full-on socialized medical health care system, Sweden style, but, you know, it's not going to happen anytime soon. But anyway.
Well, I'd be glad to pay for my health care if it was quality and available. The problem here is, like, you can have great health insurance and then no doctors available. Like, look at dental care right now. There's no adult dental care for the Medi-Cal.
Yes.
Systems. There's none.
Right.
You know, unless it's your dire emergency.
Yeah. No, I hear you. We've got a lot of flaws in our system. Listen, we're going to move on to the next caller, but thank you very much for your call. Jake in Eureka, you're on the air. Jake? All right, did we lose Jake? Jake, if you want to call back in, the phone number is 826-4805 or 1-800-640-5911. I think we do have him coming back. But, yeah, a single payer is sort of the Canadian system. You know, it's like it the joke back in the 1990s when we were talking about health care reform was that we were going to become something like Canada, which is the second worst health care system in the industrialized world. Of course, they talk about, well, you have long lines in these places. You have waiting periods. And, you know, down in the United States, you don't have to wait. Well, of course, if you don't have access, you don't get to get in line. So the lines are shorter. Okay, we have Jake now. Hello, you're on the air.
Hey, how's it going, Eric?
Hey.
Hey, so I got to respond to the guest you had at the top of the show. Mm-hmm. I don't know where he's a professor at, maybe Breitbart University. Or, Roger Stone, you, I guess. This guy, you know, kept preferring the deep state. I realize that people like Donald Trump, you know, people want to put their buddies and friends into office along with him, regardless of how unqualified they are for any position in the government. But when you hear deep state, think of, you know, career civil servants. People, for instance, you know, counterintelligence folks, like in the FBI, counterterrorism folks, and, you know, people who actually have a very important job that is to keep the American people safe from harm. I mean, should we simply allow foreign spies from adversarial governments to run roughshod over America, come over here and steal our democracy away from us, steal our secrets away from us, to commit terrorist attacks and murder countless American citizens without anybody here doing anything about it? You know, people need to think twice before they start hating these so-called deep state. And they want to blame all these, you know, the leaks of information, of course, on folks in the FBI, folks in the CIA, NSA, et cetera. But I think, you know, Adam Schiff, the California congressman, the ranking Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee, a few days ago, I think he put it best. It's like if the Republicans want to go deep, supposedly into the deep state to find out what these leaks are, they may not like what they find, because they're going to find that a lot of these leaks, in fact, may be coming from within the White House itself. Mm-hmm. Another great spot for leaks that they may find, the location of the leaks, maybe in Mike Pence's office, because after all, Mike Pence doesn't want to be president. And it's quite clear that he could become president very easily.
There have been a lot of deep state theories over the years, and some of the concepts started when people were listening to Dwight Eisenhower when he coined the term military industrial complex. And he wasn't just talking about within the state, but also within industry, and that it was a whole economic thing. It was kind of one of the more radical things said, and by a Republican president who is probably very liberal by today's Republican standards. But and then in the 60s and 70s, we moved into the whole concept of the secret government or the shadow government. We had, of course, COINTELPRO. We had Watergate. We had all the revelations about CIA attempts of assassination on Castro, on Patrice Lumumba, on a number of figures. And so it's been a consistent theory. And I guess the question is whether or not the deep state exists as some sort of coherent policy, secret government that, you know, is behind the scenes, or whether it's referring to just inertia, institutional inertia, that they're just, it's really hard to change a culture that's internal. I mean, there's different approaches to it. Carter faced it. He actually fired a bunch of people in the CIA and some of the other agencies, and a lot of them were put back into office when Reagan put back into their positions when Reagan came back in. And there have been a lot of conspiracy theories that the deep state, they didn't use that term back then, but something like it, sabotaged the rescue attempt of the hostages in Iran in order to keep President Carter from being reelected. Ollie North was spotted in some weird place, you know. So the conspiracy theories go way back, and it's hard to know, you know, what has even a ring of truth to it and what doesn't. And I'm sure there is institutional inertia that every president has to face, and when it's trying to make changes, and it's probably really hard to make those changes.
Well, you look at changes that the Trump would want to make. I mean, Steve Bannon put it out there. He said he wants to dismantle the American administrative state. And what this means, of course, is doing Vladimir Putin's work for him. People want to talk about conspiracy theories. That's fine. I mean, I believe in a few of them myself. I think most people have a couple favorites. But as far as conspiracies go, which clearly do exist, we have entire, you know, sections of criminal code devoted to putting people in prison for conspiracies. The Russian connection to the Trump campaign is a rather obvious, blatant, out-in-the-open conspiracy. And what really gets me is watching some of these folks who all, I don't know, watch, you know, Russian television, RT, Russia Today, that network. And, you know, they, you know, I'm going to say people like Tom Hartman who work on RT, people like Ed Schultz, Mike Papantonio, people who refuse to point the finger where it belongs at the Russian government, okay? What these people in the Trump administration are doing is they're doing the bidding of the Russian government to take us down.
But this isn't
some theory. This is, in fact, what is taking place. And all you have to do is look at the connections of people like Mike Flynn, Roger Stone, Paul Manafort. You know, all these people have these connections to the Russian government, and it's not by accident that they have been put in positions of power by Donald Trump. Because after all, you look at this dossier, which continues to be proven more and more every day, is in fact true. Donald Trump has been under blackmail by the Russian government for years, and he will never say a bad word about Putin or the Russian government because he is controlled by them.
All right, well, let me just point something out here, Jake, and I agree with probably at least 80% of what you said there in terms of all those details, but at least appreciate the irony. 30 years ago, you think you would have ever heard somebody talking about the Republican Party being a tool of Russia and that Russia has a plan? Did you ever think that liberals and even, you know, some left radicals would be talking about Russia, you know, as a threat to us? I mean, how times have changed, and it does to somebody who maybe not really into politics might seem really weird, almost kind of like, okay, we're not at war with Oceania anymore. Now we're, I forget what the other one was, but you know, it's got to be really confusing to anybody who, you know, was, if somebody was to just, you know, go through a time warp and come here from the 1980s, they'd find all that really confusing.
Oh, sure. No doubt. But, you know, times change.
Yep.
And we have to deal with the circumstances as they arise. And Donald Trump, you know, talk about how he got to the presidency, in large part thanks to Russia, thanks to WikiLeaks, which after all is essentially a Russian outlet for news information of a negative nature against the American government. WikiLeaks, you know, I know some people out there think Julian Assange is great. Well, remember, Julian Assange is a wanted criminal. He's wanted for rape in Sweden. And he's never written one negative word about the Russian government at all. WikiLeaks has never released anything of a negative nature about the Russian government. Gee, is it because they can't find anything of a negative nature against Russia? No, because they're doing Russia's bidding for them.
Right.
People need to wake up to what's actually taking place, and it's quite open to anybody who wants to open their eyes. I know people want to blame the deep state. They want to blame anybody but Trump and his, you know, little criminal cabal there in Washington, D.C. at the moment.
Right.
That's where the finger needs to be pointed, directly at Trump's administration.
Jake, I always enjoy your calls. Thank you very much. But I do want to try to fit one last caller in before we get to the top of the hour here.
Thank you, Eric.
Thank you. Okay, John and Eureka, you're my last caller. What do you got to say?
Hi. I've been a physician here in the county for 40-some years, and I want to just get back to what you said about Brown and concern about single payer. I'm all in favor of single payer. And in the 80s, when the HMOs got involved, the overhead, which for Medicare in those days was about, management was about 4 or 5%, the overhead went up immediately to about 30 to 33%. And that took a third of the flow of monies to the delivery of healthcare right into management.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's possible to manage at a much less expensive level and still deliver better care than what we've been doing.
Do you have any ideas as to how to do that?
Sure.
I mean, in a minute and a half here, can you solve that problem?
Sure. One, Medicare has been able to do it. I mean, Medicare was doing it.
Yeah.
They were managing 5%.
You're right.
So they had the formula.
Yeah.
Second is, even as a physician, I think we've been increasingly rewarded for testing and less for actual hands-on time with people. And if you want a favorable shift in the delivery of care, it's to reward us for time spent with people and not for just testing. And also narrowing the cost. that hospitals charge, because they will collect somewhere, even though they don't expect to get much, they put incredible prices on their services.
$20 for a Band-Aid kind of thing? Yeah,
or $5,000 for an MRI scan. Yeah. And most patients now don't feel like they've gotten good care if they haven't had an MRI scan.
Yeah.
So it's partly expectations. It's partly dealing with refiguring what physicians and care providers get and encouraging them to spend time with their patients and offer up a good level of care for everybody. And then I'm in favor of having a backup if people want to buy private insurance.
It sounds good. Listen, I got to cut you off there because we're right at the top of the hour. But thank you. Thank you, Michael, for doing a great job engineering tonight. If you want to thank all the callers, and until next time, keep thinking.